Welcome back to the Blindsiders. I am Ben, and I am here with Brian and Dylan to talk about episode 3 of Survivor 45. And wow, what an episode! I would say it's I'm knock on wood, I'm really liking the season so far. I'm just gonna say that right off the top.
I agree, Dylan. What do you think?
Yeah, so I've consumed the episode twice now. I actually remember texting you guys last night saying I thought the first 60 minutes or whatever were kind of meh, and the last 30 were great. That was really because I was on my phone the first time I watched it for the first 60 minutes, and then I fully paid attention after the immunity challenge. Really enjoyed my second rewatch today. I agree, very, very good episode. I think a lot of things are working really, really well and falling into place really well narratively, whether that's on purpose, whether it's both happening on purpose and naturally. Whatever they're doing is working. It seems like they're finally listening to the complaints that they've had for the previous seasons. So, yeah, two thumbs up. I think that it's just – and something just feels so different too, because I'm with you, Ben. I'm so hesitant to, like, really – grasp on to this season being really great, but it just feels different even from last year. Like, I love last season. I know how much I bought in early on, but something just feels different this year. I think it's the cast. I think it's everything. I think it's production. Really, really great stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think 90 minute episodes also is like one of the big thing. Like, yep. I was like somewhat skeptical. Am I saying the word right?
You're saying it right. Okay, we'll
cut that out.
About whether or not there would be like enough story to really fill out 90 minutes and like not feel like it's dragging on. But I think the 90 minutes is like vastly superior to 60 minutes from what we've seen so far. They have so much more time, especially with three tribes, to breathe and to tell everyone's story and to like really kind of dig deep down into some of these relationships that we otherwise probably wouldn't really see. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's also a big reason why this season was hitting so hard for me.
Agree. And I've complained a lot, but you know, I gotta give my boy Jeff some praise. Got a cardboard cut out of him just to praise him for being willing to listen, it seems, to a lot of the complaints. I know I was worried when I listened to his podcast last year that he was kind of reproachful when it came to these complaints, and maybe that would kind of, you know, make him become more entrenched in his decisions. It seems that that's not the case. They've gotten all new puzzles. They're doing a tribe swap in the next episode. They brought the intro back. Just so many good things happening. And, you know, I'm sorry I was so hard on you, Jeff. And I hope you can forgive me for the way I treated you.
Yeah. I'll be reaching out on social media probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we can get into it. Obviously, like, we at the start of this season in the preseason kind of did like a non-standard prediction or like, you know, preview where we each kind of like, you know, tacitly backed a tribe. And I was the one who backed Lulu, and I am extremely happy with that choice. I fucking love Lulu. One of my like all-time favorite tribes in like the new era and like the, you know, last like 5 to 10 years. Is there's not many tribes that have like just given everything that I could possibly want, just from being like not only a train wreck but like a fun and entertaining train wreck, but also like pulling off really fun moves and plays and just being unpredictable. There couldn't have been a better tribe for me to put myself behind, because they just represent everything I love in Survivor. But yeah, we start off, you know, in the reward challenge, and they finally win a challenge. And what do you guys thoughts on the reward challenge and them winning?
I think I would do well. It's another challenge I observe and think I would absolutely crush if I did it in person, which would probably not be the case if I do it for real. But yeah, rewards. It's nice too that it feels like reward challenges now with the extended time are adding a little extra like they used to too, because reward challenges used to be really important to the social game and to the narrative as a whole. And so it's nice to have those back. it's nice that they got it. I do think that the three tribes, the only reason I still think it doesn't work is clearly, and this maybe was intentional based on the preview we got for next week of potentially finally getting an actual swap again, is that Lulu really is just so imbalanced compared to the other two tribes. And, you know, and it's tough, I know, even in casting, you would have an idea maybe of who would perform well and who wouldn't in a lot of these physical challenges. And so it definitely was great for them to win this reward, because I can't imagine, too, in this three-tribe format of just – and maybe they don't do a full great job of still showing how exhausted and how, like, hungry these people are, because maybe they're not. I don't know. There's that whole theory of how, like, maybe they are eating off camera. There's, like, that whole weird thing online. But
I don't think that's the case. But
I'm just a messenger, all right?
We don't subscribe alien to temple, that theory
here. Alien temples and people eating in Survivor when they're not on camera.
I believe the aliens before I believe they let the people eat on Survivor.
But it's been something that we've talked about, is that they never really show in the edit of, like, how much people are actually, like, struggling. And I think it's just really, really prevalent now when they do the actual challenges themselves, especially the immunity challenge. I think that at certain points, just mentally and physical exhaustion is just so unfair. And it's so much different when you have two tribes as a whole, because obviously half the group is going and not eating or whatever it is, and the other half is. So winning, yeah, them winning was great. Clearly it didn't make a whole difference overall down the road, but I think that the bonus of that obviously was Caleb being able to go and do his social game. So I think that was kind of the biggest win out of that whole thing.
It's interesting that you said that you think that Lulu is struggling because they're not built as strong, like, physically in these challenges. But if you actually look at all three of the immunity challenges they lost, they've been on par physically with the other two tribes in all three of them, and they just fucking crumble on the puzzle every time. And maybe that's why they win this reward challenge, because there wasn't a puzzle. It was all carnival games.
You might
relive carnival games.
You might be right, too. I might be, like, incepting myself and confusing both the difference between, like, mental and physical in these challenges, because obviously, clearly, you know, had Brandon been able to solve a puzzle, they wouldn't have gone to tribal last week. So I think you are right. So that is a good point there. Maybe, but I guess then it's tough to gauge mental capacity with puzzles when you're casting. Yeah. But there definitely is an imbalance there that alters the game because of it.
Maybe Hannah was the puzzle ace from casting, and they were like, "Well, Hannah's really smart, so she'll be good at puzzles for this team." And then she quit, and they were like, "Well, that's not great." Brandon thinks he's good at puzzles, but only because he's not good at everything else.
Yeah, he thinks he's good at puzzles by default, but he's he's actually just, you know, slightly less bad at puzzles than climbing.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that maybe this is, like, exposing another flaw in some of the challenge design, where if, like, 90% of the challenges come down to a puzzle and you have one tribe that is just dog shit at puzzles, they're just gonna lose every challenge. So maybe don't have every challenge come down to a puzzle.
We've seen it. I mean, call back to their former previously on podcast where we quote, you know, puzzle master Laura Moret, you know, like, I don't think her tribe lost more than, like, two challenges across, like, two seasons while she was, you know, on the puzzles. And, you know, when you have someone like that who's just, like, above and beyond everyone else, you know, Rob in Heroes versus Villains carried that villain's tribe, which was not physically, like, up to par with the Heroes tribe in any way, men or women on that tribe. But because Rob was, like, so dominant at puzzles, they were able to win a lot of challenges. I think you're right, Ben. And in the earlier days, you know, we'd have, like, the challenge would be, speaking of Boston Rob, in Marquesas, get rocks out of a boat from the bottom of the ocean, float it to the top, and whoever gets to shore first wins immunity, right? Yep. Like,
or if you're looking at Heroes versus Villains and talking about which challenges the heroes actually did well in, something like Sumo at Sea, or like in that case, it was over mud, but that like just straight up sumo wrestling where it's like the more physical tribe is probably going to win, but there's no puzzle. So, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I do think that, you know, we've on Big Brother, me and Brian have talked about there needs to be a greater variety of competitions and challenges. I do think that on Survivor, they've kind of fallen into a bit of a predictable rut where it's like the vast majority of challenges are like do a physical thing and then do a puzzle.
Which I wonder why, because there's so many great challenges early on that could easily work well here. I don't get the commitment to like the new era of challenges.
I think it's always going to be an equalizer in the sense that more likely than not, one tribe will not finish the entire challenge before the other tribe gets to the puzzle. Yeah. And if you're both at the puzzle, you can kind of fudge how close it is, you know, with different like shots and editing. So I feel like they want to like build this narrative that like, oh my God, the challenge is so close. Mm-hmm. And they can do that a lot easier with the puzzle than they could, you know, like, what a ring toss at the end.
Or like if it's like Schmergen Brawl or like the slingshot one, like a tribe could just easily get blown out and, you know, just get boom, 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 5-0'd or whatever. Like,
which is, you know, it's fine because it will add like a narrative at some point. Like, you know, we've seen tribes like Oolong get decimated, you know, just because the other tribe was better at everything, no matter what. So I think we don't need this puzzle thing for the editing as much as Survivor maybe thinks that we need it.
Yeah, I do agree that's the reason, though. It's the same reason that like game shows have these like, you know, triple point final rounds, double or nothing. So like, you know, if one person or team on the game show seems to be running away with it, it's like, oh, but wait, the final round is quadruple points. So, you know, you never know what could happen.
I always think of Family Feud when I think of that. Because, like, you can have a family that literally has, like, 299 going into the final round and lose the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, yeah, we have one answer on the board, and it's 40,000 points if you get it right.
Well, yeah, like Final Jeopardy is like, oh, you can risk your entire score, or the front runner can lose theirs. Yeah, it makes sense.
It's good game design for television suspense, but bad game design for fairness.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, I was very happy to see Lulu win. I think everybody on Twitter was hyped as hell to see this happen. You know, we don't want to see a new, you know, I just referenced Oolong. We don't want to see a new Oolong. We don't want to see a new Matt Singh. Luzon, even like we want these tribes to win some challenges along the way.
Yeah, and it's also more interesting to see more tribes go to tribal council because you get more, you know, you get to see more players play, you get to see more deeply into every single player's kind of, you know, strategy. So
that's I still feel like it's a legitimate complaint with having the three tribes set up, though, is between a mixture of that and between them not getting fire right away, it's such a massive disadvantage going forward. Is that it's so like you said, I don't think that there needs to be a whole balancing system, but I guess there kind of has to be if that's how they're going to play that side of it. If like you're not going to give them fire, they're not going to be able to eat. Once again, I don't think they've really pushed forward the stress and them not being able to eat this season. I think that's still something they're flopping with. Production wise, especially with 90 minutes, like, and I know you don't always want to see people complaining about not eating or like how cold they are at night or stuff like that. But if you think of like other situations from earlier seasons, it was like really compelling at the start. I always think of, Fishback with his like the most pruned up hands I've ever seen in my life. Like those are things that obviously play into the narrative later on. So I still am not fully buying that whole, like, this is the toughest game you can play because they're so starving, mainly because they don't show it. But it clearly, like I said, plays out in these challenges. And like you said, Ben, you highlighted that they're actually doing okay physically wise. And it seems like when they get to the puzzles, they're screwing up. I guess, like, so it'll be the same thing for the mental exhaustion side. I don't know. That's something I still really wish, and I know everybody wishes they go back to the two tribes and they just go back to the regular fire. I just don't think it adds anything, especially if they're not showing it. And then you just have a tribe that just continues to lose and lose and lose because they're not eating and they're dehydrated and they're so mentally drained. That is not interesting to me, but I guess that's why Lulu winning this time was exciting, because typically what we've seen with these loser tribes, and each season there has been, in the recent seasons, there have been one tribe that has gotten their ass kicked every single time in the beginning of the season. So I guess it is a nice win for that, but I think that's still a flaw they're going to have to fix eventually, because it just doesn't work. And I don't think it adds anything to the game other than that we got Lulu, who happens to be really great show-wise, working with being the Lulu losers. But other seasons, it was literally just like, this team is hopeless because of all these disadvantages that have been thrown at them.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's the three tribe format, you know, it just, I think we've talked about it. It's just the snowball effect of you losing one person and it snowballs into, well, that one less person around camp to do everything. One less person in the challenge. No one's ever sitting out. It just, you know, keeps going. I do want to talk, you brought up, Dylan, that fire pit. Do you think they're trying and they're just not succeeding? Or do you think they've given up entirely? That's to either of you.
Ben, I think they've given up.
I think they've given up also.
Yeah, which is extra surprising considering Sabaya has an idol that she has to get by burning. And whew, I mean, it was bold of her what she did in this episode. I don't think if she had asked, Jeff would have said yes. I think you have to do what she did.
Yeah. Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Yep. You throw it in and then you're like, it's in the fire. So what are we going to do here?
That was going to be my point later, is that I almost don't know if Jeff really even considered that just based on the look on his face.
No, he did not. It was awesome.
Like, it worked. It all worked out. It was great.
I couldn't tell if he was like, he was loving it or hating it.
I think he was hating that he didn't realize that this was going to be an option.
Yeah. He hated that they kind of pulled one over on him, but I think a little bit he was like, this is a good TV moment.
Actually. Oh, especially, you know, we're going to talk about how it turned out. It was amazing television, like very, very good. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've seen like the most extreme version of this before, which is like Survivor Fiji. Where the show like baked a twist into the game that made it intrinsically almost impossible for one tribe to win challenges. So yeah. Like, it's at least it's not that egregious. And I do think that like it is an issue with the three tribe format, but historically there has been like a panic button, like that the show has available to them for when this happens, and it's a tribe swap. Which luckily we're getting next week.
Finally. Yes.
Yeah. Shout out to Lulu for being so horrible. That production is like, well, we built all these pre-merge challenges for three tribes. We're not going to be able to do three tribes if we don't swap this, because. Mm-hmm.
So we do think it's a lock. They'll go to three and not two.
I guess all three buffs in the pro now.
Okay. So that's going to be three tribes of five.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
which I'm fine. Oh my god, we'll get to it later, but the fact that they're doing a swap at all, amazing. I couldn't be more like excited.
Yeah, I do think a three tribes of five will create like more interesting post swap dynamics too, as opposed to like when they've done three to two before. There's sometimes cases where one tribe, there's like a very clear majority group that kind of very, you know, naturally forms. So. Yeah, I think it'll be more interesting. I don't think they've done a 3-3 swap, have they?
Heroes, healers, hustlers.
Oh, they did. Yeah, that's true. Yep.
That is the only one I can think of right now.
Yep.
All the others have been like 2-3, 3-2.
Yep.
I thought it was good on that season, personally. I thought it worked out well, so I'm excited that they're bringing it back.
Second chance, it like stressed me out. I remember when that happened, and it ended up saving Spencer. But when that happened, it completely stressed me out watching it. It's like, three. This is ridiculous.
He was so bowed. I did like that they went back to two before the merge. That was inventive. They had to keep them guessing in that season, you know.
Yeah, the 2-3 to 2. It definitely I would say harmed the ultimate outcomes of Game Changers, but you know, I think it worked in Cambodia.
Do we think there's any chance we get a 3-3-2 out of nowhere, but a real two though, of like no like half have made the merge, half haven't, like a real pure.
Yeah, no, they've been merging at like 12, 13 recently, so there's already 15. Like, unless they swap to at 15 and then swap again the week after at 14 to turn out to 7, which seems psychotic. I don't know why they would do that.
That would be a lot.
I don't think so. I think we're probably just going straight from the second swap.
So that's like the other kind of shoe away in the drop is if whether or not they do like a real true merge at the end, or whether it's like half save, half not bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not to get too in the weeds, but I saw people discussing like, well, they can't do 20 people because, you know, you have to have a number divisible by 3, you know, because of the shorter game. And it's like, do 20 to start, break them down to 3, have a couple of only one tribes winning immunity this round. Mm-hmm. You can get the numbers down pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've been, you know, able to do double eliminations. Like, they've been consistently doing this double elimination twist at 10, which I personally don't love, but, you know, at least, you know, reduces the numbers for their schedule. Or you could have no double elimination rounds and just do a tribe or a cast of 16.
That'd be fun. I'd love that. It's been, back to basics a little bit.
Yeah, I think, what, is Token Genes the last time they did a cast of 16?
Yep. And I think that was supposed to be, like, we're going back to, like, the basics of Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the best seasons ever. So, you know, it's being referenced to this day on the show.
Was that that's the only time they aren't on the ocean either, right? Was that the only time they were on anything other than the ocean?
In the earlier seasons, Africa, Amazon, China.
Australia,
of course, yeah. Australia. They almost went to Jordan, where someone would have died in that season if they did a Survivor season in the desert. Mm-hmm. But thankfully that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here now. And Fiji is very beautiful. Like, I always think about that during the transitional shots. It's like, as much as I would love to see a new location, I understand why they stay in Fiji. It is like a very beautiful, you know, place on Earth.
Yeah. And I know that they've had issues previously with like Cambodia. I know that was like a historically bad location for them. So I can understand. They're like, okay, we find a location that works. You know, it's like, you know, nobody's complaining. Well, people are complaining, but, you know, nobody's complaining so much that they're stopping watching the show. You know, we don't have to come up with any stupid twists anymore. We'll just haul them numbers. And I understand why they do it. It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. And they got a good setup. I liked Samoa when they were there for a few seasons. That was nice too, but mm-hmm. You know, it was fun. Do we want to talk about my winner pick almost dying?
I think it was an exaggeration because, like, I think they really hammed it up in the.
You could have fallen into the fire.
You could have fallen. Well, it looked like more like embers than a like.
Full yeah, that was the issue.
Yeah,
he was breathing it in and had like a bit of a spasm.
Yeah, but this is kind of what we predicted last week. Was it was probably just a smoke inhalation thing where almost made him pass out.
Yeah. So I'm glad he didn't get medevaced. That would have been a sad way. What, it would have sucked for him. But, you know, it would have been especially sad for me. That's the most important thing here. My winner pick would have been out. But it is funny how the show used this as a jumping off point to, like, finally show him getting an alliance.
I was about to say, that's probably maybe the most exciting thing that has happened for Bello, because I think Bello overall has been probably by far the most boring tribe.
Well, there's the one-sided beef that's pretty fun, too.
Yeah.
The Couture of Bruce beef is really funny.
She had to figure out who she hates more, the lawyer or Bruce, and she's still rolling with Bruce.
She just hates him so much, it's so good.
But I like... I mean, I think Bella's fine. Like I said, I think they're the most boring of the bunch so far, and it's not their fault. It's just they've been winning, and they haven't. There hasn't been as much action in that side. Has anyone? I don't even remember. Has anyone even found the advantage clue or nope. the idol yet or anything yet? So like, there's been nothing going on there. So this is literally the most exciting thing that happened. So I get why they why they made it over exaggerated like that.
That is true. Yeah, they're the only both other tribes by the end of this episode had found the full idol, mm-hmm. and Bello has not even found the Beware advantage to begin with. Yeah, not a great look for the tribe as a whole. But yeah, I like the Jake and Kendra scene. I think that it made me more like focused on Kendra in particular as a player. I think that was a really good connection for her to make.
It makes sense, the two kind of like well, they're just very Massachusetts people, and like it makes sense that they gravitated to one another. Yeah.
It's one thing I get back to the casting too, is I do think there's a lot of people that are seemingly competent to decent players on this season, and people making smarter moves rather than dumb moves. I feel like we've gotten just so used to just so many dumb moves, and even the moves where people are telling people about their advantage or idols, which is something I normally hate, has been used in an effective or solid way, or used in a way that makes sense to why you would do it rather than just saying, hey, I have this idol. So I think that's another bonus too, because I agree. I think that she stood out to me too in this episode, that she's someone that isn't just going to be like tagging along. She's someone that is actually doing some form of thinking for herself and realizing not to not overcommitting to one thing over the other. So that's like, I guess that's the only development. And Katara still hates Bruce. That's the only two developments I got out of Bello today.
Well, I do think that it's important to kind of keep in mind the Katara and Bruce thing, because we have this like women men thing going on, but Kelly and Brando have connected across that boundary, and now Kendra and Jake have connected across that boundary. So like, by Katara like being so locked into this one-sided beef, which is understandable, I can see why she might think that Bruce is annoying. I probably would think that Bruce is annoying from what I've seen, but like, she is now isolated herself to like a much smaller range of potential allies than everybody else in the tribe except for her. And you even see in the conversation that Kelly and Brando have that Brando seems like he was probably going to try and throw the vote onto her if they ended up going to tribal council. So it really is demonstrating to that, like on Survivor, like it's fine to make enemies, but you can't make enemies until you make like enough friends, right? And I don't think that she'd made enough friends to like, you know, justify starting to make enemies.
Mm-hmm. And it reminds me a little bit, you know, of Big Brother, check out the Have Not Room. Although we didn't do it this week because of bad scheduling, but next week we'll be back. In that game, you cannot close yourself off to working with anyone, especially early, because by virtue of the game design with HOHs, the structure of the house can change each week. We're going to see the structure of the game change next week. And she's probably going to end up on a tribe with Bruce.
I think I mean, that narratively would make sense for why they focus so hard on this. Otherwise, it probably wouldn't matter.
Yeah, so she might be the swap boot that we're looking at next week. So planting a flag in it here. We'll reconvene next week to see if that's where the storyline pays off.
I don't know why I randomly just thought of it now too, but I do have I have some content ideas going forward. And one of which is I'm going to have a cry count every time Sean cries, okay. Whether it's okay. Good or bad. So I will report back next week with my findings. I tallied at least 3 or 4 times this week, whether it was a happy cry or a sad cry. I don't know why I randomly just thought of that, because it's something that I laugh at every single time. And the best was his face after the vote.
Yes,
that was great. Yeah. I will stay tuned next week for the Sean cry count. I will report back with my findings.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, I mean Sean like visibly went through all 5 stages of grief in the span of like 3 seconds after that blindside. yeah, so I guess let's get the Bello stuff out of the way, and then we can really focus drill down on the Lulu drama. But yeah, I thought Bello actually was really interesting this episode. That's kind of a, like a B story, because we have Drew and Austin continuing to search for Austin's idol.
Reba. So.
Yes. Oh, Reba,
sorry, I was confused. No, they were boring. I just said it.
Reba, sorry.
I was a little like, where's Matt going with this?
Yeah.
We've covered them.
I know the names.
I know they're in my tribe. I should be trying to.
I know the names of the tribes of the season, and I still got it wrong. Reba, sorry. Reba. We have this this four-person alliance that's kind of been formed between Drew and Austin and Julie and Dee. And Austin and Drew are going to try and look for this idol in secret without notifying their other two alliance members that it's happening. And they have this lookout system where there's like two ways to get to this tree that they're digging at. And in order to do a lookout, one of them is just sending it down one of the pathways. And it's like, I mean, that's, you're kind of just creating a coin flip scenario here where like anybody could just come up the other pathway, which everybody starts doing.
Yeah, not good. I love this duo, but it is a little bit like Steven and JT, but dumb. I do think Drew's playing an amazing game, but yeah, this was bad.
I mean, I don't think Drew has that much of a poker face, which we'll see when he eventually gets caught with his hand in the cookie jar. And he's just like looking down, like somber look on his face as he's lying to them. Can't even look them in the eyes.
No, because I agree, Brian. I do think Drew's playing a good game, but that was a very funny, like almost kind of like he is a rookie, but like a rookie mistake to make of just being like he even said too, when he walked off in the wrong direction too, when he stood up. I would have like played like I was taking a shit or something. And like, I don't know if they have designated bathroom areas on the island. Right. I think that's something that they might possibly have, but yeah, I would have been like, I would have just said, I'm trying to take a shit. That's the kind of player I would be on that island. I don't think I'd last very long now in hindsight. But no, I love Reba as my tribe. I love him. I think I hit the nail on the head with Drew. I think Drew's a legit, very real player, but I do think that there's the dynamic there between him and Austin that is going to benefit them down the road. I think that it's pretty obvious that there is an alliance of four, but it's more so two alliances of two coming together now. And I think Dee, who was obviously the one in the outs at first when it was three, I think her, and I'm forgetting the other woman's name, they're kind of like coming together by circumstance now when it's clear that Drew and Austin are working together, but I think they're doing it really well. I think what's also more surprising too is that Sifu and Jay Meyer are like, those are two players that are kind of just there. You know what I'm talking about? Like opposing, like, which is fine, you know, because maybe down the road that they'll be real threats because of how chill they were. You know, when I first started watching Token Jeans, I didn't think that coach was going to be a real threat. And, you know, he down the road almost won the game twice. And so, I mean, who knows? But there's just like, I have no idea what they're doing. I don't know if they even realize that they're on the outs in their own tribe at this point, so there's definitely some interesting stuff that could have happened there. I don't think we'll get it now, because now with that swap, like, it's all going to kind of be thrown about. So, I mean, that's probably going to be where Sifu and Jay Meyer are going to have a chance to actually show their game maybe, or just flounder out. But, yeah, I like Drew and Austin a lot, but I also don't think that Dee and Julie are pushovers either. So I do think that there is a very interesting dynamic there. But Drew is killing it. I mean, to be able to convince Caleb to be able to give him the advantage there is huge. So I like my winner pick a lot too, mainly just because Ben's already out, and Brian's is going to get medevaced at some point. So I like my pick a lot, but Reba is a very, very interesting, where I think that they're the most comfortable, and they're also the ones that are probably going to maybe hurt from the swap the most compared to the other two tribes. So that's obviously something interesting there.
Yeah. How big a loss do you think the fishing gear will be for them? Probably not. I don't feel like they're not catching that many fish.
Okay, here's the thing. They did a looting challenge or a looting reward right before a swap. What is the point? You loot the tribe.
They're like,
the tribe's camp, and they're like, okay, now we're swapping tribes. They're like, okay, what the hell is that for?
They're like, surely these idiots will steal the flint.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Lulu or Caleb for Lulu steals the fishing gear, and it's like, what are you gonna do if you catch fish? You don't have a fire to cook the fish.
And he acknowledged it too. That's why, like.
Yeah,
I don't know. If maybe Flint was off the table. Like,
that's the only thing I can think of too. Yeah,
but yeah, it's like you're taking the fish gear only to hinder Reba at that point because you can't do anything with it. Maybe obviously they don't know a swap's coming, but down the road, you know, if you get fired, maybe it works out. But yeah, that was it's because I was saying to myself after in retrospect, I'm like, wait a minute, why didn't he take the Flint? But it has to be that it wasn't allowed.
Yeah, because they tie it to like winning and all that, and it gets a little messy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was just a very funny moment. What'd you guys think of Dean truly giving the hammer to Austin? Why? They already showed that they're gonna lie to you. You can lie to them.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I guess it like full solidifies. Well, here's the thing, right? Based off of the wording of the rare advantage, would Austin just never get his vote back until the merge if he doesn't personally take ownership of the idol? I think that's how it works. So maybe that's the reason.
Right. Maybe.
They're right. Like, we need him to have his vote.
Maybe, because I do wonder if the idol's found, do they just get the vote back? They just don't have the idol.
Yeah, I have to look at the wording.
The two that we saw so far would be like, if you just found the wax, you'd be like, what the fuck is this? And then the other one, you're not going to get it out of a rock, you know, without a hammer. Who knows what Bellows is? But yeah, it seems like it's like you very like specifically have to get it by, you know, getting the beware advantage. Mm-hmm. One thing I wonder, so it's if you have it right away, you can use it right away. If you risk your vote, it's good to the merge. And if you risk a second vote, it's good for like a normal idol.
Yep.
What if you just don't go to a tribal council before the merge?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to wonder. I don't know which one takes precedence. I guess it's always going to be good for the one tribal council regardless.
Right.
And that then makes sense.
Are you saying a scenario where they unlock the idol, see that, and then don't
just like,
go? I was going to say, if they don't find it before that, I guess they would need to find it before the merge, but if they don't find it before the merge, I guess at that point you could just say you need to risk it twice to get the final five. But yeah, that is true. They would have found it. Yeah, I think it just negates it. I think at that point who knows? Because this is still an issue with over complicating the simplest of things. It just it happened to really, really work out very well in this episode.
Do you guys think that idols were too powerful?
If anything, I think they're too. I think they're too handicapped. I think that they. Because in the end, an idol's an idol. I don't think so. Because I think that if you just find it, you should be able to have it until final five. So I definitely don't think they're too powerful. I think when you have beware, you have the ability to steal someone else's idol. I think advantages get way too powerful. But I think idols, if they would just go back to the basics of there's two or three idols out there for each tribe to go through. And each time one's gone, another one will come into the game. I think that just works so much better. I just think because if anything, I at first would have been kind of pissed that like I did all this work for the idol, you know, and I either have to use it right now or I have to risk it. Like I would have been pissed at that, because then you don't really have the idol at that point. It's not up to you when you want to do it. You just got to hope you make it. So no, if anything, I think the idols are potentially hurting games more than they're helping, which we saw with Spaya.
Yeah, I don't like the having to risk your vote. I get that it's the trade-off of like fire tokens or the vote? What do you prefer to have as a form of currency within Survivor? I don't like it. I think idols are fine. And like, if you're a good player, you find an idol and you don't have to use it.
Well, you know? I think that's their issue, right? Is this is like a contingency for if somebody has like a slight majority and then finds an idol, mm-hmm. it like either forces them to like throw away their idol when they don't need to, or to like potentially give the underdogs who don't have the idol a chance to have like an easier time flipping a vote because there's like, you know, one less vote to worry about.
I definitely get that, but
yeah.
I mean, Rick Devens was fine. Ben was fine on they were in, you know, the minority position, but they worked to find, you know, get mm-hmm.
I don't think they just want like three people having idols at the final six is what they're trying to avoid, it seems like. But the solution to that is just to stop rehiding them.
That's what I was about to say. But they themselves can still avoid that based on their own rules for the idols, because mm-hmm. it never really, I think it created really interesting dynamics in the older seasons. Like if you look at Tony, who was the master of idols to keep getting them, I think it created a really interesting, I mean, if every couple seasons you have someone that gets to bully people around because of the idol, I think that that's worth doing whatever they're doing now. Because like I said, Brandon technically was the one that found the clue to the idol, and his first instinct was to just give it away because he was going to lose his vote. I think that's where they have to stop with the losing your vote, because that's probably the thing I dislike the most, is because the vote was like the whole point. That was like your last mm-hmm. say to be, and if they want to keep the shot in the dark, then whatever, but the ability of to not being able to control your own fate at some point there is silly to me. It is frustrating too, because like you said, it could potentially just completely kneecap somebody that's playing a good game because they happen to find this idol, or they happen to fall into the spiral of whatever the steps of getting this idol is, like what happened with Matt last season. I know that wasn't idol related, but just the ability to not control your game, I think stings. And so, we've talked about before too, would you even want to find an idol at this point? Like obviously your gut instinct is to say yes, but when you really sit back and look at it and you're doing all this stuff and you're being forced to have to go to other people for help, it's very frustrating, because before you just steal the idol and you're out, and you don't got to go through 1,000 different things and go back to the same spot 25 times. You get the idol, you're out, you hide it, and at that point it's up to you whether you want to play it or do it, whatever you're going to do with it. Maybe you hold on to it all the way until 5 and you never say a single word. I think that's way more interesting than having to solve all these puzzles. With that said, I don't mind the way they're doing it this season as much as I have previous seasons. I just really wish they would stop with the losing your vote stuff. But mm-hmm. once again, it just really, really, really happened to work out.
Paid off big this episode. Just, narratively.
I think they got lucky there. And I think they got lucky that Sabaya did the things that she did.
Yeah. And, you know, it does have like the silver lining of like it's good for one tribal, so you do still have like if you find this idol and you're going home that round, you can still save yourself, so that's good at least. But it does also kneecap you, because you know, two votes are important too. Like, say you have an ally and you have an idol too, like now it's like, well, I'm saving myself, good luck with your one vote. Trying to do anything.
That's kind of my point, is like this version of the idol is less powerful, but I think it's only less powerful for the people who are already in a good spot. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're in a bad spot, it's like basically just as powerful.
But I think it all kind of comes full circle too, of at this point in the game, though, I don't know if relationships are necessarily strong enough to warrant you fully wanting to risk it. Clearly Sabaya thought so this episode that they were, but if you have a tribe that keeps losing, you happen to have someone that doesn't have their vote, that sucks. That's because you're basically at that point you're like hoping and praying that you win that immunity, because if you go back in the situation to where you know you have no fire, you know you're gonna have no vote, it's really, really tough for you to try to play the game that you want to play. And I think when someone has an idol and they're allowed to play cocky, I think it's really interesting, because you see the type of player they really are. too. Like, once again, obviously Tony's a very easy one to go back to because he did it so well and it worked so well, and it was so ridiculous that he was allowed to carry on with that for so long, and he just kept fucking taking idols and people giving him idols. It was just, it was really, really compelling. And in this spot, once again, it worked out really well for production wise, but I would kind of be a little pissed if I was Savaya, given she did have a chance to save herself though. But at that point, if she did save herself and there was no votes against her, you're a reverse side yelling, you're an idiot, you should have just kept playing it. I don't know. I think an idol should just be an idol, because it's not as ruining, because if Sabai did have an idol in this and had her vote, you know, we could have potentially gotten a different situation of a drawing. I don't think they would have went to the rocks, but yeah, I don't know. And not having your vote is terrifying, and you're going to try to do everything not to do it. And then I don't know. We'll talk about when we get to Zabaya, my thoughts on her, but I don't know. I just wish they would go back to the old ways. That's my overall point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Tribal Council. Obviously, very sad that Lulu lost. They had the sad music out there. They were in the lead too, and they couldn't, you know, bring it home. Zabaya, obviously, you know, she didn't play a great game in this round. Why do people get so obsessed with these big moves at the beginning of the game? Survivor right now, like when you're in the early game, you're supposed to just be setting yourself up for the end. You're not supposed to be like thinking about sitting in the final Tribal Council seats when you're, you know, I know there's only four people and maybe that's making you think about the end game, but there's a long way to go, and getting rid of Caleb, I just don't see as like a good idea. Maybe you guys can convince me it is though. I'd like to hear your take.
Well, I think her bigger fault was trying to make this move without really having the social capital with Emily that she seemed to think she had. I think she was a little too cocky with that, like thinking she had Emily when she didn't. And on top of that, like, she, at the start of the episode, lies about having lost her vote in a situation where, like, she very obviously lost her vote. Like, you can just do the math. Like, I don't know why she wouldn't just say, yeah, I found the Beware advantage, but I didn't find the idol yet. And like, that would have been a fine, like, three-quarter truth, you know what I mean? And it would have, like, not made Emily be like, well, I have Caleb, who was the first person to put any amount of effort in with me, or I have Sabaya, who I asked a very straightforward question, and she lied to my face for no reason.
That's my takeaway too, is that regardless of idols and no votes, Sabai just overplayed her hand and misunderstood her position with the rest of the tribe. And so I don't think Sabai is necessarily a bad player. I think she's one of those players that maybe got too good too quick for one or two days and just really overthought it. So I guess maybe that is a bad player, but I agree. I don't know. I don't think that there was ever, I don't think any of that played out as you would want it to. Because, yeah, I think when you have not, when you haven't won a single immunity challenge yet and you're talking about endgame, it is silly, and it looks silly. It is so obvious to just drive home. I never even would have talked to Caleb about, I mean, I guess he brought it up of who to put the vote on. You know, I think if you would have just nailed home, especially because you know or feel deep down that Sean is truly, truly with you, which, by the way, this that would have been another Sean cry at the end of the game when they played that sad music before they went back to camp, of why you would even want to put that in Caleb's head, that, you know, like, I would just say, you know, it's us three, let's vote for Emily, that's it. I don't think you have to go into the nitty-gritty of who to vote for and who not to, because that's the other issue too, is that it was obviously what it was known. She told Emily, I don't have a vote. I never would have done that. Because at that point, Emily now realized that she has an option to do with it. Obviously, Emily put together that there was a vote missing somewhere. She just didn't know where. I don't know if Caleb told her after the fact on the side. We didn't see it. I don't know. But just not smart. And that's another. The fatal flaw was overplaying your hand and just for some reason thinking about endgame when you haven't even made a swap or a merge or anything yet. It's just dumb. And that's what I mean. That idol and losing your vote at this point in the game is such a crippling effect, because you don't have those relationships yet. like, even if you think you do, like, how many times do we see people backstabbing? So I think, like, I don't know if she actually thought she was that solid with Caleb. It's crazy. It's just crazy to make that move.
Yeah, extra funny considering how contentious Emily and her relationship has been, to where she was like, well, Emily will just be happy to be here, you know? Yeah. Like, she'll just do whatever I say.
Yeah. A big mystery of Emily. It's like literally like the Emily's entire thing is that like any small slight against her, she'll like call it out immediately in front of everybody and be like, hey, this is obviously a slight against me. Like the idea that she'll just be like somebody who rolls over and like, you know, takes what's given to her is just not like, it's a massive misread of her personality.
especially revealing to her that you don't have a vote and to still think that you can call the shots when you don't have a vote, and you're also revealing you don't have the idol. You can't have the idol. Like in hindsight now, talking through it, it's such a ridiculous overestimation of where you are in the game. It's just wild. At that point in the game, it's wild. You know, if you're in like, if you're down to like final eight or something like that, or you made the merge and that's your opinion of if you've had friction with someone, but you've been so long, you're willing to tell them that, then sure. But yeah. Now like saying it out loud and talking it out, it's such a ridiculous way to play it.
This is good. This is what I was looking for. Cause I was like, this is dumb, right? This is like horrible. And you guys seem to agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's definitely like too cute, right? As we say before, and I think that even if it was a normal idol and she had a vote, but she didn't have to play the idol, I do think that from what we saw, at least, it seems like Sean is the most likely to be the one to flip on a revote. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if Sean's going to rocks for Sabaya. So I think she probably is out regardless. It might be a little bit more, you know, up in the air or a little bit more dramatic. But
I think it maybe changes. I think oddly enough, I think it maybe gives her, I don't know, less confidence going into that somehow. I don't know. I think there was a lot of misplaced confidence going into that, which we just fleshed all that out. But I don't know. Maybe in that situation, Caleb doesn't want to dare go against the majority. I don't know.
Yeah, good on Caleb for being willing to like listen to Emily and kind of be like, why would Emily tell me this like on her own? You know, like it's not really a lie that would serve her necessarily, you know, because there are only two of them. But I'm glad that he went with her, and it should be very interesting to see if they can stay together or if they get swapped apart and come back together at the merge, maybe. But, you know, very interesting down the line. And I think you're right. I don't think Sean, and this is no like shade to him, because I wouldn't go to rocks for someone on day six or whatever they're on either, but I don't think Sean was going to rocks.
Mm-hmm. Sean seemed to be the only one though fully committed to someone in that tribe though. I think
50 rock though. It's not even like final 12 type thing. It's
literally a coin flip to go.
Yeah.
I think Emily did it both out of the smarter move to tell Caleb, and then also realizing that she owed Caleb one too. So Caleb and Emily projections continue to go up for me a lot.
Yeah, buy the stocks.
I'm very pleased that I put my my flag on the Emily ship, you know, minute one, episode one, and like haven't like it only gone up from there. Yeah, I know a lot of viewers, including Dylan, were very anti Emily after episode one, but I've been very locked in pro Emily.
I think what's other than her obviously just seemingly being a good player too, I think her story has been nice too. Just someone that wasn't self-aware going into it is now. And I think or someone that maybe was, you know, trying to play it up for the cameras or something. I don't know. And then quickly realizing like, what am I doing? This isn't like who I am. It makes it very, very easy to root. It's it's easy to root for someone that can recognize their own flaws and fix it. It's like very, very easy. It's, I always go back to Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. It's like, is, if you see someone realize how much of a dick they were and turn it around, it's like, well, it's very intriguing. you know, if you disregard how that ended,
but hopefully a better ending for Emily.
Yeah. Emily and Caleb are, I like a lot, and maybe it might be a little sexist to say of Emily is a cross between Cass and like Denise for me, if Caleb is like the Malcolm to that kind of duo. But I think that Emily can be a dominant and threatening player like Cass and Denise were. I think she's more so like a Denise, but once again, I think I'm maybe only associating her with Denise because I want the Malcolm and Denise aspect. I don't really know, because obviously there was a lot of Cass there, but I'm definitely rooting for them. I really hope they stick together, or if they do split apart, kind of be able to do something similar to what Malcolm and Denise did and kind of affirm their alliance. I don't know. But they're definitely the two other outside of Drew of who I am rooting for the most at this point. Mm.
For all you Australian Survivor fans, George, Emily reminds me so much of George, mostly in how she speaks to people. No bullshit, no like ulterior stuff, and it's wonderful. But yeah, that's all I got this week. I don't know if you guys have more that you wanted to, or if we can hit the outro.
Well, I do want to. I know. I called that a hard cut, but I do want to quickly talk about the Sabaya, the actual tribal itself. So we talked about it earlier too, of like Jeff just not expecting that at all. I do think I think Sabaya doing that was very, very smart. Because I don't even know if I would have considered that or thought about it. I like to think maybe I would have, but that was smart, and obviously incredibly, incredibly intriguing to the viewer. It all just played out so well. Her not knowing until last second of what to do. It was one of my favorite tribals in a long, long time.
I just love the idea that like that thing is definitely like a gas powered like set. It's like. And wax on our, you know, it's not like a regular fire pit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the ingenuity, and I always like when, you know, interesting or unique gameplay creates interesting and unique story. And yeah, it was fun. I personally probably would have been one of the people who would have like asked for permission rather than forgiveness. And I would have pulled aside like a producer professional and asked them like, hey, is this allowed? And they would have been like, no, it's not allowed. That's cheating. And then I would be like, okay,
well. They're a little devious. They would have been like, well, you know, you got to do what you think is right at the mm-hmm.
Well, at if they said anything but a hard no, I would have
been doing it. Yeah, you would have done it.
Yeah. I mean, like if everybody already knows you have it, you might as well, right? Like the only downside of doing it at tribal is like you're basically revealing your hand. It's just such a ballsy thing to do. So yeah,
I might get on Jeff's shit list, but you know,
yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's a newer, funner version of like wearing your immunity idol to the tribal of like you saying, hey, I need to like kill 15 minutes to melt this thing down. If you can kind of like keep it going. Mm-hmm. I would have also been really funny and interesting too if she opened it up and it was just like another clue and it wasn't,
yeah,
it wasn't the idol, and that's why Jeff was like, oh.
There's a hammer buried at your water well.
That would have been amazing. It did kind of give me a little same feeling of Adam trying to play the podium as an idol. That was awesome. Yeah. Love Adam for doing that.
The first time an idol has technically been uncovered at Tribal Council.
Yep. Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah. It's you know, the stats people are going crazy trying to figure out if it counts.
I would have figured that would have happened by now after that episode. I was like, next season they'll definitely do it. But
yeah,
Jeff hates Adam now. So.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, they're never gonna admit that anything Adam did was a good idea,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very surprised. Like, you know, we've speculated forever that an idol in the voting booth, you know, an idol, you know, and dais or whatever it's called, Jeff stands up.
Yeah, I had to film in LRG once where people literally spent 5 minutes looking through the voting booth.
Oh yeah,
an idol that wasn't there. But I couldn't say anything because I'm just the camera person.
No, I've I'm retired from LRG at this point, but every single LRG after that became like an idea that could, you know, be happening. Like, I know, I think Australian Survivor did it once, right? And that's where everyone got like crazy.
South African, maybe.
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, one of the international seasons did it. But after that, every single LRG I played in post that being a thing, I was like, yes, I have to spend, you know, X amount of time at the voting booth looking for an idol at least the first time.
Yeah,
it's just stupid not to.
Yeah, I think the problem with that one was they decorated it way too nice to where people were like, there has to be something here amongst all like the cool props. But yeah, I'm gonna be sad to not have Sabaya anymore. But if it means that we keep Emily as a character, I'm okay with it.
I think that there's most people left now. I have some sort of like connection to, excluding maybe like Sifu and Jay Meyer for the reasons we talked about earlier. Maybe Bruce too. Julie. I don't know. But I think that there's people. There's a lot left that like I don't want to see them go. Mm-hmm. And like I think that Sifu and Jay Meyer have a role to play in the rest of the season. Just in the very small samples we've gotten from them. That jam session was great. So I hope we definitely get more in that. I do, especially Sifu. I hope that there's more to give there, because he seems like somebody that could be either really, really annoying or like really, or like a funner version of Coach, where he's just like ridiculous, but it works. So yeah, no, I am bummed to see Sabaya go, but I'm gonna feel like that about pretty much the rest of the cast.
Yeah, I guess there's the pros and cons of a really good cast.
Yeah. Agreed.
I have nothing else, though. I don't know if you guys, No, very happy. I'd say the top five episode of the new era for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Absolutely. I think there might be two episodes in the season I've thoroughly enjoyed that are definitely up there. So, yeah, I agree.
All right. Dylan, where can they find you online?
Twitter. DJ Clubberlang. I'm talking about an exit strategy out of the Middle East as we speak. So
okay, good. Go ahead. Someone had to figure it out.
Yeah. Follow me there. I think I pretty much am solely tweeting about Survivor and the occasional the Patriots suck, I think, is my tweeted the past couple
of really I unfortunately suffered through that Saints game, so it was
did you go to it?
No, I didn't go to it, but I watched all of it, and usually when they're losing that badly, I turn it off, but I hate watch the whole thing.
We could dual threat this podcast as like a football one. The Blindsiders, a football podcast.
I mean, the Blindsiders is already a good name for it.
speaking of other reality TV podcast, I do know that Chad from the Have Not Room did attend the Saints and Peter's game, unfortunately.
Yeah, he went there. That sucks.
So,
we could be a podcast. West
Stadium's a nice stadium. Like,
yeah.
We could be a podcast that fully dives into Michael Orr and that whole situation. Blindsiders, a Blindsider podcast.
A serial style podcast.
Yeah, we just dissect how it was like a sham.
Mm-hmm.
I never bought into the
hype around that movie, so I'm feeling vindicated.
Yeah, there's no way a rich white person has ever done a good thing.
And on that
note, so yeah, follow me on
Twitter. Ben, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Sharon. For more jokes like that.
Oh man. If you are actually looking for sports stuff, check out our Wicked Sports channel. Otherwise, this channel is on Twitter at WGEverything, Instagram, Wicked Everything, Twitch, twitch.tv/WickedGetEverything, and on TikTok, search Wicked Everything. Search Wicked Sports too. We're there as well on TikTok. And then I'm on Twitter at TheFakeBMarr, BMARR, mostly these days, as Dylan said, tweeting about Survivor. If not that, tweeting happily about the Dolphins for the first time in my whole life. It's great. Can't wait for the shoe to drop. I know inevitably it will, but for now, enjoying it. So other than that, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.